Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is episode 166. Tom, stop making those baby sounds.
I really wish I could.
We've got a special guest in the studio.
Yes, Lily is joining us today. Other arrangements were unavailable. So she's 5 months and she's only into watching Bluey, The Wiggles, or The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
Is she a fan of Eeyore?
Yeah. But who's not? She gets excited whenever Piglet's around because he's small.
Tigger's fun.
Tigger's fun, but he's a lot.
An adult, small doses.
Yeah, as an adult, you realize that he bothers the others.
Uh-huh. And for reasons that you understand. Yeah. Yep, yeah, I get you.
He's a lot.
We will be having a special guest in, apart from Lily, a little bit later on to talk about a trailer that I've only watched once, and I know you know a lot about it, but this person knows a lot more. So, we're going to get Nathaniel in, which will be a lot of fun. It'll be his debut on The Watchers. I've got another great themed quiz for you, which I'm looking forward to getting into to see how you go with it.
I'm sure it will be a challenge.
Or you'll just breeze through it.
Who knows?
No one will ever know.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. Our town's Foundation Day is this Saturday, and the excitement and anticipation around the town is palpable. Always one of the biggest days on the calendar, this year seems to be no different. Here's some highlights to look forward to. Giant balloon animal competition, where big animals, like our local herd of elephants, compete to see who can make a balloon dog in the fastest possible time. Ice cream headache endurance race, world record paperclip daisy chain attempt, and the penguin impersonation walk race. Make sure you get a good night's sleep the night before the big day so you can try to get around to as many events as possible. It's been obvious for some time now that there's no scary ghosts living in the Watchersville National Park. Over the last 18 months, 4 different paranormal TV shows have camped out there trying to find evil spirits. In the end, they all found out what us locals have known for years. Ernest the Friendly Wallaby Ghost is super nice and doesn't ever go out of his way to spook people. But with the last production crew clearing out and leaving last week, it's become official. We have the least haunted county in the state. Congratulations to us and to Ernest. Good work, champ. Next month, the cast and crew of season 225-ish of The Real World will be moving into the old McMansion mansion. They will film all the drunken fights the cast have with one another and put it on television for the world's entertainment. If you would like to take part in the program as a local love interest, they will be holding auditions at the town hall all day next Tuesday. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
We've been watching stuff, listening to stuff, so we'll give you some watching suggestions. But shall we crack on into the news first?
Let's do it.
So I saw that John Krasinski is finally getting to host Saturday Night Live for the first time this weekend. He was supposed to do it last year around the time when the pandemic first hit. So obviously it didn't happen for him. And then the following weekend after that, that will be the 6th of Feb, Schitt's Creek, Dan Levy will be there, and that's his first time. And then the week after that, Regina King will be hosting for the first time. So the first, like the next 3 weeks, all first-time hosts, which is great.
Nice.
Big names too.
Yeah. Krasinski should be good. There should be some good news stuff related in there. I'm sure there'll be some very deadpan looks in the camera.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, it's funny you were talking about the good news thing. No, what was it called? Not Good News Week. Very Good News.
Good News Network or good something. News, or some yes. Good news.
I've got more about that later on.
Sure.
Yeah. What have you found around the traps?
So I was happy to see that AMC theaters in the States have raised approximately $917 million. They were projecting to go out of business bankrupt by the end of January. So jeez. There's been a real last-minute reprieve for them. And they reckon that they are now good for many more months.
Awesome.
Not that there is an end in sight for things in the States and stuff, but they are in a far more positive position than they were for the majority of last year. They can see that, you know, there are systems in place to help them survive.
It seems like they've got more strict rules around, you know, mask wearing. That's more mandatory there.
Well, the theaters still aren't
vaccines around.
Yeah, the theaters still aren't open. So no one's going to the movies and stuff like that, but it's just in terms of paying for rent, paying staff, all that sort of stuff, they are able to continue covering their overheads.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yes.
Michelle Pfeiffer's going to be playing the former First Lady Betty Ford in a Showtime anthology series about a few different First Ladies of the White House over the period of whenever First Lady started, probably in the beginning. I don't know. I don't know enough. Hamilton didn't tell me about the First Ladies.
No.
So there's no way for me ever to find out. Bit of a stellar cast, though. They've got Viola Davis. She'll be playing Michelle Obama. And also, she's an executive producer. So that's kind of...
Sure.
It's funny when you find out actors are executive producing, because then you kind of get a context around what kind of production and show this is going to be. It looks like it's going to be pretty top quality.
It is funny how much clout they had. You know, we were talking about Edge of Tomorrow last week, and with the sequel, Doug Liman, the director, came out a few days ago and was like, I'd love to do it, but we've just got to wait for... If Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt are ready, then we can do it. That's the sway that Tom Cruise has. If he wants to do the film, it happens, but you just got to wait for a window.
Have we heard him mention anything recently?
Not recently, but he's very amped and big on the project.
He's also amped and big on getting productions happening and, and couch jumping and that kind of thing. But
he wants people to work. He wants the industry busy and this sort of stuff. So
it can continue to be, fruitful for everyone. So season one of this First Lady show will have Michelle Obama. They'll be focusing on her, Betty Ford, and Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yes.
She hasn't been cast yet. But I thought it was interesting because Betty Ford was around in the 70s. Michelle Obama, of course, we know when she was around. And then Eleanor Roosevelt was around basically during most or if not all of the Second World War.
Yep.
So they're three very different times. So
to me, an anthology series is like a Twilight Zone where every episode is a self-contained story.
Sure.
Maybe there's a wider narrative that stitches things together.
Yep.
But it's like piecemeal, it's like reading Goosebumps books.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Slappy might pop up a bunch from time to time, but it's just it's in this town or whatever like that. So maybe it's like that.
Yeah, that would work. That seems logical at least.
Hopefully it's not like Black Mirror.
Yeah. Oh, not a fan of Black Mirror, I see, Lily.
Acme's number two customers, right behind Wile E. Coyote. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Okay, so I don't watch either of these shows, but 911 and 911 : Lone Star, which is the spin-off from 911.
Right.
They're doing a crossover, like a DC Arrowverse style thing. They're uniting to fight a giant wildfire that requires the services of both teams.
Look out. It's all go.
Yes. Now, Rob Lowe is in one of those shows, and I think it's hilarious because a big event like this, so they're firefighters, ambulance drivers, this is a 911 first responders.
Yep.
If there's a giant wildfire, I feel like I could bet $1,000 right now that Rob Lowe, by the end of the episode, will have less ash and stuff smooshing and smearing
his face
the other characters.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that would be in Rob Lowe's contract or something.
Don't make the pretty face dirty.
That's right.
Yeah.
He can have Hollywood grub on his face.
Yeah.
But not.
Maybe it's a little bit under one eye.
Chris Traeger from Parks and Rec would not play that way.
No.
He was all about clean and healthy living and stuff like that. So,
exactly.
There'd be rules. So I think that's cool. I love a good crossover episode and stuff.
And wildfires, they had their massive wildfires not long ago, last year. So everything's quite fresh in their mind.
Correct. Topical.
Very topical.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
I get my head around the tone of this Borderlands movie that they're making, because Kevin Hart is now joining Kate Blanchett in the cast of the movie adaptation of the video game. So I don't even know what the storyline is. I'm assuming it's going to be based around the first game, which will probably set things up. But he will be playing Roland, which is the ex-soldier turned mercenary. I think he was playable. I don't know. I've only played the second one, so sure. And not the whole way through. So
I've never played any of the Borderlands. I just know that they get pretty darn crazy and people are very fanatical about them.
Craig Mazin, who created that HBO miniseries Chernobyl, has written the last draft of the screenplay. So it has a potential to be quite dark, but then you've got Kevin Hart there as well for comedic. I just can't figure out the tone they're going for.
Surely he's going to play some wasteland, like Mad Max style guy.
The character he's playing was playable, so you could end up having him just going rogue all over the sure. world or the, I was going to say map. Gesundheit.
Bless you. He is great fun in the Jumanji movies. If he brings that sort of energy, I'm really down.
Yeah.
He makes fun of himself a lot in those films.
Yeah, nice.
It works.
Nice.
Yep. Here's a really labored segue. Kevin Hart,
yes.
Good friends with The Rock.
That's
Rock
right.
is starring in The Jungle Cruise, which was meant to come out last year, but will now be coming out at some point.
Oh, okay.
So The Jungle Cruise ride at Disneyland and Disney World, they've announced is getting a revamp. And this is pretty cool. Similar in the way that they're revamping Splash Mountain to move away from Brer Rabbit and the culturally insensitive stuff. Part of this move is to remove a lot of the stuff to do with the natives and the head hunting and head shrinking.
Okay.
Yeah. And stuff that was, the ride was built in the 50s and it was inspired by Jewel of the Nile and old school swashbuckling adventure films. So it wasn't it was still a racist stereotype, but it wasn't perceived in the same way it is now. It's, you know, it was a cultural shorthand for people that lived in the jungle, which was not something you at that point had seen regularly on television or in films or knew about learning at school or all sorts of stuff. So in a different setting, it needs a big revamp, and they've revealed that part of, you know, they're taking a lot of that stuff out, but they are going to be adding a lot of storyline, and this is what's got me excited about this change. They're adding a storyline about a skipper's boat who has crashed. So the skippers are the guys that take you around on the boat, and they make jokes the whole time and make fun of the ride.
Right, okay.
So the storyline is going to be that one or two of these other boats have crashed in front of you, and the skippers are now trying to save guests that were on their boat.
So stuff gets real.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
but like not scary for you on the boat.
Okay.
But schadenfreude.
Okay.
So you're going to see a bunch of tourists being chased up a totem pole by a rhino, which used to be a big game hunter and a few natives climbing the pole. And now it's going to be the skipper at the bottom getting speared up the butt with the rhino horn and then tourists around. Mm. There's other animals being added and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I imagine they have to tie into the movie some point.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, because they added Johnny Depp to the Pirates of the Caribbean and stuff. And I think it would be pretty cool seeing an animatronic of The Rock. Yeah, so.
How would they do that? And make it any, I'm sure they will. If anybody can, it will be them.
Yes. And so there have been other rides that they say they're changing that is a bit of a bummer. But this is one that since the very beginning, it was the very first ride that Walt Disney changed. So there's a story that Walt was walking around Disneyland on like the second year it had been open or something like that. And a young mother walked past with a kid and the kid said, I want to go on Jungle Cruise. And she said, no, we went on it last time. We don't need to go on it. And so he then came up with the idea of plussing, which is the idea that you're constantly adding to rides and changing the experience to make it worth coming back for.
Yeah.
And so the Jungle Cruise has been one of the biggest ones of that. Is at Christmas it changes to the Jingle Cruise.
That's fun.
And there's been all different iterations over the years and stuff like that, different storylines and things. So I can really see, you know, it's ripe for a revamp. It'll be pretty cool.
Just off the top of your head, how many times do you reckon you've been on it?
Oh, honestly, more than 50.
Holy
and I don't
cow.
Live in a country with that ride.
Yeah.
It is the funniest thing in the world. And I've read books from former skippers of like collected stories from over the years of things and stuff. These guys are, it's a weird mix of improv and very rehearsed stand-up material. And I appreciate the dedication to going out there and telling jokes that bomb for 34 rides a day.
They would have to bring it every time.
You got to go high energy or you go no energy and that's your character.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And stuff. But the best ones are always the really, really animated ones who pick on people on the boat and this sort of stuff. Being an Aussie, as soon as I pipe up, I'm a target.
Of course.
It's great
different
fun.
Accent. That's it. So The Great Gatsby is coming to TV. A&E Studios and ITV Studios over in America are teaming up with the writer Michael Hirst, who's worked on stuff like Vikings, Elizabeth, The Tudors for a huge big budget production of this show. No idea where it's going to because they're still shopping the series around to networks and streaming services, those kind of things. But it's probably going to be a limited series, so just a one-off. Kind of like, what would you say, like your Pretty Little Lies kind of thing?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, no, what was it called? Big Little Lies is what okay. I meant to
it's
say.
It's a very finite story, Gatsby.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you study at school?
No, but I saw the movie whenever it came out. Yeah.
I studied it, so I don't need to see this one again. It's fine.
Yeah.
I'm sure it resonates a lot more if you live in America.
I did read that, what was his name? F. Scott Fitzgerald's.
Yes.
It's like great-great-granddaughter or great-granddaughter, so something like that, is involved in it and is working, you know, as a producer of some
description. I wonder what sort of fantastic insights she will bring to her grandfather's work.
Well, I can tell you, she said that she wants to have a more diverse, inclusive version of Great Gatsby.
Oh, like a reflection of what the 1920s were.
Exactly. Basically, I think they want to do the Great Gatsby, but make sure that it's acceptable for 2021 crowds, audiences.
Maybe they can set it in 2020.
Maybe they could.
Pandemic's around again.
Give it a burl.
The rich deserve to be eaten.
That's right.
Roll around. Well, stay tuned for any suspicious vehicular murders in small towns.
Exactly.
In a world that time forgot. We are the Watchers.
So I know you've been excited for the Tomb Raider sequel.
That's right.
So there was some news this week that was both cool and a little disappointing, depending on your outlook on things. So Ben Wheatley, who was going to be directing, is no longer involved. He has moved on.
Okay.
I saw he had something else cool, but I can't remember what it was on the plate. Anyway.
Was it along the lines of, I've been waiting for so long, there's this other offer, I'm just going to take it because it's a sure thing?
Yes, and it's still a big budget thing, and he apparently they were ready to start production in March 2020, and it couldn't go ahead, and he waited as long as he could. So taking over will be Misha Green. She is the creator of Lovecraft Country, and she will be directing the Tomb Raider. Has it got a name?
I can't remember the name. I can't even remember what the second Tomb Raider game was called. Well, I mean, there's been several different second games, but you know what I mean.
I feel like it's going to be something like Tomb Raider : Ascension.
Reloaded or yeah.
Yeah.
Any of those ones.
The next tomb.
Yeah. All of the tombs.
Mm. Look, the other thing I'll give a quick shout out to is Bluey. You know I'm a big fan of Bluey.
Absolutely.
We've been enjoying it very much in our household. Their soundtrack came out on Friday, which is all written by a local Australian artist. And recorded here in Australia, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It instantly shot to number one in the Australian charts.
Wow, cool.
And the last I saw, it was at number 7 in the US charts.
Gee, that's good.
Across music, not children's music, just
okay.
Music.
That's bloody impressive.
Yep. And it's one of the rare kids shows that doesn't resort to singing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not songs being sung by children or things that – it's just great little instrumentals, occasional – bit of clip, you know, audio from the show of them talking and this sort of stuff to set it up, but funky little tunes.
Have you got it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I got it straight away on my phone the other day and she's listened to it plenty and then we picked it up for Shay's CD player in her room the other day for when the girls hang out. And we've been going, Lily's been going for walks in the stroller and listening to it on Daddy's phone, haven't you? Gives you big smiles while you look at the trees.
Look at the trees.
In terms of news, that's all I've got. But
awesome.
I know there's a bit of trailer talk.
Mm-hmm.
We've got. We'll keep one for our special guest to come in and.
That's
tell
right.
Us.
Yeah.
But the other one, and it's surprising because we were talking about time loop movies last week. There's a movie coming called Boss Level. Now it leaked online last year. So some people have seen it already, but I want to see this one proper. It stars Frank Grillo, who he's Crossbones in the Marvel movies, who he's the guy that gets in a really good fight with Captain America in a lift.
Sure.
In Winter Soldier.
Yep.
And anyway, he's in a bunch of stuff. He's always really good, badass, everyman kind of guy.
Yeah.
He is stuck in a Groundhog Day loop where he keeps getting taken out by assassins. Yeah, Mel Gibson's the bad guy. He's somehow got the technology that's keeping Frank Grillo stuck in this loop.
Right.
It looks like there's some utterly ridiculous action. It's directed by Joe Carnahan, who did Smoking Aces, and he does very good over-the-top frat boy action.
Yep.
So it will probably be a bit of a throwback. And yeah, it's called Boss Level.
Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes, it's called Boss Level because he's got to keep leveling his character up and working towards the boss.
That makes sense.
So he doesn't know who is killing him or wants him dead. So he's got to keep going through it each time and eliminating people on his list of suspects for who could be.
It's always got a bit of a John Wick kind of.
It feels like John Wick meets Groundhog Day.
Yeah. That should be good.
I'm down with that.
Should we get our special guest in here?
Let's do it.
Find out more about Godzilla and Kong.
If you aren't getting your watches fixed just by listening, follow the watches on Twitter and Instagram.
Tom.
Leah.
Nathaniel's in the studio for the first time officially.
Yay.
Hey.
Hello. Welcome.
Kia ora.
How's it going?
Good. Yeah, everything's really good.
We'll be using you quite often. Sorry, I should rephrase that. We'll be inviting you on in a really friendly manner quite often because you're a bit of an expert on a few different sorts of just different shows and movies that maybe we don't know, like we're not up on all the back lore and that kind of thing.
Perhaps. Maybe not expert, maybe more nerd, but that's all right.
Got to embrace it.
Yeah. And you've got a youth angle.
Oh, yes.
Compared to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You won't get some of our references, and I won't try and say yeet.
I promise I won't say that either, good. So that's fine.
Brilliant. As long as we've all come to that conclusion, that's really good. No, we've brought you in for today because this week the huge trailer dropped with two huge monsters in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty good. You want to say it?
Did you say that? Did you?
Yeah.
Godzilla vs. Kong. Did you see the trailer?
Yeah, I watched it a couple of times.
Oh, me too. Wow.
That punch was pretty seismic.
It was insane. Mm. I was loving it. Mm. Like, I even went back and had a look at the like old trailers from 1954 of the Godzilla vs. Kong. Like when they're like, you know, I don't know. I kind of, my dad made me watch those when I was real young. So like it was kind of like
Toho films.
Yeah, with the little puppets and stuff. Yeah. And it's amazing. Like it's all black and white and the very unexpressionless, but amazing. And then they've kind of adapted it, so it was really cool to see Godzilla in Tokyo once again, which is cool. And then you know, Godzilla and Kong fighting in Tokyo and on top of the battleship like they did in the 1964 old Godzilla vs. Kong movie. So that was really cool to see. So I'm excited.
I think there were a few hints in there that like it's making it look like Godzilla's the bad guy.
Yeah,
which is not,
that's how I took it.
Something's up with Godzilla. There's a few clues in there. Like in the first Godzilla movie of the recent ones, he purposely swims underneath boats, whereas this we see him just swim straight through.
Yeah.
One of them. And he's when he's climbing up on that carrier, the way he's scrambling, that's not how Godzilla moves. No. So something's up with him.
Have you got theories?
I don't know. But the fact that at the end of the last Godzilla movie, Charles Dance from Game of Thrones, he'd snuck off with King Gojira's head or one of the three heads. So there's one shot in there from inside a subway station looking up the stairs and a head walks out. And if you look real close, I reckon that might be Mech Godzilla.
I saw that too. I saw that as well. Like the little, you can see it. It looks like Godzilla's head, but it's got like flashing lights all over it. And I was like, that's odd. And to be honest, I did a lot of like comparisons in how, like who would actually win in size comparison versus brain power in Godzilla versus King Kong, which is like ultimately Godzilla would win because he's literally nuclear.
And he's God.
Yeah, although King Kong having not – is it King Kong or is it just Kong? Just Kong.
Sure, yeah.
Having that battle axe, that's a bit of a game changer. Mm. However, I feel like the Kong and Mechagodzilla, which is ultimately, I would imagine, built by the humans in like a Pacific Rim type style to take on Godzilla and just sort of take him out for good, and then Kong can just be left alone on his little island. And then the humans can sort of have back what they had. Although, you know, how many more Titans there are, we don't know.
I know. Look, my theory is that this building of Mech Godzilla somehow disrupts, because in the last Godzilla movie, Godzilla defeated King Gojira and he is now King of the Titans. And so if the DNA or whatever from Gojira is being used in Mech Godzilla, then maybe it's somehow having control over the other Titans, and it might even be messing with Godzilla somehow.
Ooh.
So it's maybe made him like real horny. I'm trying to get in a really long way. I really hope we see Godzuki.
Godzuki?
The baby Godzilla.
Oh, like in what version was that? The 1997 version?
No, so isn't the 70s, there's the, he's got the little baby one that runs around with him.
It's not like Scrappy Doo, is it? It's not like a precocious kind of.
Yes.
Damn, that's going to be annoying.
Mm. It's not the one where we laid all the eggs in Grand Central Station.
That's the Matthew Broderick one.
Right.
In some of the 70s movies, Godzilla literally has a little kid.
Oh, right.
Godzilla that runs around with him, and it's like in a man in a cheesy suit with a smiling dinosaur face.
Beautiful.
Yeah, Godzuki.
It's like a baby Yoda, baby Groot type thing for, you know, just product selling.
1,000%, yes.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like if you were to genetically mix the standing up King Kong with the hunched over Godzilla, you kind of end up with a fucked up Godzuki. So, I don't know. We haven't seen Godzilla fuck in a long time.
What you think 2021 we're due it?
Maybe not me personally. No. I don't need to see it, but there are people that want to see that.
So you're saying, look, give the audience what they want. This is all fan servicey. Like Nathaniel was saying, there's scenes there that are clearly referencing older movies.
Yes.
We might as well go into this.
If we're
this
going all out, if we're going to get a mech version, get us a baby version too.
Yeah, fair enough, I suppose. I mean, like, at the end of the day, if you've got giant monsters fighting, then, I mean...
You're already there.
You know what you're going to the movie for. Yeah. Like, I remember when I went to see Godzilla, King of the Monsters, I was in the Philippines, and the movie ticket cost me $7. It was the cheapest ticket I've ever bought.
That's great.
It was amazing.
Worth it.
And I went there, and I was just like, you know, it's like the only movie that I'm actually interested in seeing, and I kind of walked in expecting nothing but a giant monster mash with no storyline whatsoever.
Mm.
I was pleasantly surprised as compared to Kong and Godzilla. Like the first two ones, they were kind of like a bit iffy. Like you never really saw the monsters until like halfway through the movie. And it's like, oh yeah, cool. There was a nice little storyline, but it was more of a backstory.
Yep.
I feel like Godzilla, King of the Monsters was actually quite well structured. And
it hit the ground running.
Yeah. And then there was some insane monster fights as well that I was just like, whoa, that is just beyond what I can even comprehend.
They got Rodan and Mothra in the same film. Oh, I was stoked.
Oh, Mothra, yeah, right.
And then like 10 others that we didn't even see. It was wild.
Do you think Mothra will return in this? Because like Millie Bobby Brown is back. And I don't know if you remember, but in the last one she had like that mental connection kind of thing happening with Mothra. Mothra back in the old movies had like priestesses that spoke on her behalf, human priestesses.
And you might as well have Millie Bobby Brown, aka 11 from Stranger Things, having the connection with an enormous moth.
Yeah.
Was that through the computer thing?
Yeah.
And
like she kind of sacrificed herself almost like flying into a giant fly swatter type thing to give more nuclear energy to Godzilla so he could beat Gojira at the end.
Right.
Mm.
But she's a big moth. She'll lay larvae somewhere.
Oh, for sure.
She'll come back. So
there's gonna be a giant moth larvae island somewhere near Kong.
Baby Titans.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you call a baby Titan? A tit. Nice.
On that note, Nathaniel, thank you very much and welcome to We Are The Watchers. We'll definitely be having you back in for different things. You know, like when we do fun specials, you're going to be involved. There's going to be a lot of good stuff coming this year, I reckon.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Cheers, buddy.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Let's get into some watching suggestions.
Let's do it.
I've been watching a few things and I finally finished one of them. Around this time last year, there was a show that came out on Netflix called Virgin River, and it was just popcorn, easy Hallmarky kind of TV show that I was just watching to chill.
Sure.
And the second season came out around the same time. It's taken me a bit longer to watch though this time round. But I wasn't feeling it as much. So it was still giving me everything. But there were more mysteries involved in the first season. Like you weren't quite sure what some people's background stories were, and watching them unfold were really interesting. But coming into the second season, where you kind of knew all of them.
Sure.
So then it was more just like a soapy and,
Didn't enjoy it as much?
It was never a great show to begin with, but, yeah, I was just a bit over it.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right.
Hey, I've got one of a second season that I thought was great.
Yeah.
So the second season of Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous dropped on Netflix on Friday.
Ah, right, okay. Now, you were really surprised about the first one.
I was really impressed. Mm. It was a lot more adult than I expected, and it tied in and you know, really addressed a lot of the stuff in the movies.
Yeah.
And so this season starts pretty much about 18 hours after things went horribly wrong at Jurassic World.
Yeah, right.
And the kids are just on the island now. That's it. So no one's coming.
Have they given the whole season?
Like, yes. So just everything dropped. I watched all eight episodes
you're done.
Real quick.
Yeah. Wow, that's impressive.
It is set up so that a season 3 can happen.
Excellent.
If it doesn't, I'll be really, really, really surprised.
Okay.
And I honestly think it'll come later this year.
So if it doesn't come out, how does that go for the storyline? Like, is it a real cliffhanger where you're like, well,
no.
Okay.
So it is set up in such a way that if it doesn't come back, the kids will continue to find a way to survive, and 5 months from now or whatever.
Yeah.
5 months from now on island time, the events of Fallen Kingdom will happen.
Okay.
So people would show up. Presumably they'll be rescued then.
Sure. Okay.
I don't want to give too many spoilers for people that saw it and enjoyed, but there was a return of a character that I was thrilled about. Toro, so all through the first season they were terrorized by a Carnotaurus, which was a big feature in the second Jurassic Park book, The Lost World, but they didn't include in the Lost World film.
Oh, okay.
It's a smaller T-Rex with bull horns.
Oh, okay, wow.
And, yeah, they call it Toro, and he kind of becomes their antagonist and chases them around the park in all the different parts.
Okay, that's cool.
And season one ended with them, he was chasing them underground and they set a bunch of stuff on fire and he was trapped. We didn't see the end of him. And he comes back this season and he's all burnt up and stuff, and like, it's kind of Wile E. Coyote style.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Of this animal doesn't know better and it just keeps coming at him and stuff, and that's very cool. But there are some adults that appear this season. I don't want to give away any storyline with them because they don't pop up. But one of them is our boy, close personal friend of the show, Angus Sampson.
Look out. Bit of an Aussie done good. He's he's been in so much stuff
over
in the
US. He's been in a lot of stuff, and he just does such a gruff, good Australian accent of like, I'm a pissed off old guy.
Oh, so he does an Aussie accent in the show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, he's on the island of Sorch. Out yeah, like this, so don't you kids muck around anymore. Like
that's that awesome.
It's very cool. He's an interesting character. There's a good play on things there.
Good,
I won't give anything away. And the other two adults, one of them is Bradley Whitford, who you know I'm always a big fan of, and Stephanie Beatrice, who is Rosa on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, who plays such a deadpan character there. But here she's doing a similar sort of voice to the Lego Movie 2, where she's actually doing her proper bouncy.
Like her actual voice.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Hype it up.
Yeah. Great fun show, and I would put season 2 probably above season 1. There's now that they're away from the constraints of having to work within the timeline of the first Jurassic World movie, they can start doing their own thing and doing some really interesting character studies. There's one episode that's just one character.
All right.
That was pretty cool.
Well, that sounds really good. And I do like that second seasons can get into their stride, and that, you know, sometimes the first seasons are just the big setup, and then season 2 is when things start to happen.
Well, secretly, I think this might have actually just been the second half of season 1.
Yeah,
I think they did it all at one go.
So I've been watching Superstore over January.
Sure, nice.
That show is funny.
So it's on my list. I've always meant to get into that because I know for a while there it was paired with Good Place.
Yep.
And, you know, I think I saw one or two episodes completely out of continuity when I was in the States a few years ago, and I thought it was funny.
Mm.
So you've been watching from the very beginning?
From the very beginning, yeah.
I hear it's a stellar cast.
The cast is brilliant and the characters are brilliant. There are some characters that you're like, I don't care when they come into the story that's being set up, but they need to be in here because I can't wait to see what they say.
Sure.
And there's characters like Brett who I don't actually think I've heard him say more than maybe three words. And he's not in every episode, but you're like, where's Brett? And he never, never ceases to amaze you how unimpressed his facial expression is in any situation. But yeah, amazing, amazing show. I think at least once a season, they do a slow motion walkout.
Sure.
And that's always funny. Their Halloween episodes are really brilliant. There's one, I can't remember which season, maybe about season three or four, that is spot on. Like they were trying to cancel people like Mario, as in the character, you know, the video game character, for appropriating Italian people. So they're trying to cancel culture that. And America Ferreira was dressed up as Mario. And she's like, you can't cancel. Yeah, very funny. Some really interesting takes. And their social commentary is refreshing. It's not rammed down your – they don't ram it down your throat, but you're still like, yes. That is very good point.
From what I'd seen and from the characters involved in this sort of stuff, I imagine it has a lot of diverse voices and opinions.
It does.
That it caters to a lot of the spectrum.
Sandra is one of my favorite characters. She's from Hawaii and characters keep saying, why did you move from Hawaii to Iowa?
That's a very good question.
Why are you here? So there's a lot in there. It is wrapping up. If it hasn't already wrapped up, it's wrapping up in the next couple of weeks or something. She left, and then they had problems with production in terms of COVID, and then they just went, actually, we're just going to finish it up. So maybe I think this will make it the sixth season. Maybe that is a good time to stop. I'm not sure. I'm not caught up to it. I've still got many episodes left, but they've done, I think by the time they finish, they will have done about 113, but very, very worthwhile. For us here in Australia, it's on Amazon Prime, and they've also released, I think, just the first season on Netflix, so you can catch it anywhere, and it's great.
Awesome. I do intend to get to that one.
It's got some good jokes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. I'm going to give a plug to two films.
Sure. Which
just to wrap things up from, we were talking about time loop stuff last week. And I had a friend who listened to the show get in contact with me afterwards and said, dude, you didn't talk about Happy Death Day. And that's a really valid point. So I went and rewatched Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You.
Right.
The sequel. Partly in preparation for Freaky comes out available on iTunes today, which is the Vince Vaughn body swap movie, the Freaky Friday / serial killer. Or it was originally called Freaky Friday the 13th.
Yep.
So Happy Death Day. I don't know if you know anything about it.
No, it's nothing.
A girl at college wakes up one day, goes about her normal day. She's a sorority chick. She's a bitch. And at the end of the day, she gets horribly murdered on campus. And then wakes up in...
This is ringing a bell.
And wakes up in the bed again. And again. And again. And again. And she's being hunted and hunted and hunted. And like we were talking about, has to work through a list of potential suspects and try and work it out. She has very little skills in those ways. So it's funny. It's really...
That's very, a dark humor.
Very dark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thing. That so sounds interesting.
The first one is this poor girl is stuck in the loop. And it's a straight-up horror movie. Mm-hmm. And then the second one is a sci-fi movie because it turns out that one of the characters who is only very tangentially involved in the first film is a quantum mechanics major who may have accidentally turned a machine on before it was supposed to go on.
Okay, yeah.
And so it's not just creating a time loop. It's now shunting her between realities.
She's not – the universe does not like this character.
No, and so – I'm really, really hoping that they do the third one, which needs to be called Happy Birthday Tree, because her name is Teresa, but everyone calls her Tree, and then Three.
Happy Birthday Tree, yeah.
But, like, man, these movies are great fun. And so I'm really excited for Freaky because they have a lot of fun with that format and the expectations and stuff. Good. And she comes to accept the fact that she needs to die and stuff, so starts having fun with the deaths, Groundhog Day style, jumping out of a plane in a bikini.
Well, you might as well. If you're in a continuous time loop where you spend your whole life in that one day where you end up getting murdered, you might as well go crazy.
Well,
okay, all right. That was a good high-pitched well. I understand.
The injuries stay internally, so no one can see what's wrong with her.
But she's in pain.
And she's getting worse and worse and worse. And
oh, wow, that's really extreme.
So there's a very – she's on a clock. She doesn't know how many lives she's got is a better way to put it.
Yeah, right. Okay, wow. That sounds fantastic.
I think I would love this movie. Like, I know I say it's a horror, but it's horror in the same way Shaun of the Dead is horror.
Yeah.
In that it's actually just a comedy that has a few little jump scares.
That are a bit
– but mainly make you feel good for not being scared by this situation.
Yeah. I'm braver than this. This
is clever, especially the second one.
Also, the second one you enjoyed more.
They're just the first one is it's a piss take on the 80s slasher horror movie getting hunted at campus, and the second one is a whole different thing.
Okay,
Like everything I've pretty much talked about, there's a line I'm not talking about the second movie now. Because you need to see the first one to get the second one. And the second one, the less you know going in, the better.
Okay, yeah.
Because as I say, there's reality stuff rather than just time loop.
It gets really
convoluted and out there.
I'm going to put it on my list of things to watch then.
Are we ducks or what? You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Before we get into the quiz, we've got to talk about WandaVision. So I think you said that you were reading online a lot of people who got, you know, early preview episodes of the first three were saying that the third one was the one to watch because things really started to go crazy.
Yep.
And they did.
And they did a bit, didn't they?
It was great.
Yep.
I really enjoyed it.
You got some questions?
Yep. Got a lot of questions. Not many answers.
Yep.
There were a few answers from where I'm looking. The
stork was great. What a literal manifestation of the baby's coming. It was awesome that her kids are named Tommy and Billy and that they had arguments over that. Wanda and Vision's children in the comics are called Tommy and Billy.
Okay.
And I think I talked about this. Did I talk about the Young Avengers?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So it was a big shout there. But on the flip side,
yes,
it may not be as big a shout towards that as I initially thought.
Okay.
Because they're I'm trying to dance around. Tommy and Billy are very closely linked to who may be the actual big bad of this show that they're being very cagey about. But we're starting to see more and more demonic and satanic references throughout the show. Lots of 666s.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine's Hahn's husband, who has never seen, which is a sitcom staple of the character that's never seen but talked about. His name is Ralph, and she keeps making jokes about his appearance, how devilish he is, and this sort of stuff. So there's a lot of theories going around that he may be Mephisto, who is the Marvel Universe's kind of version of Satan.
Mm-hmm.
He imagines Satan mixed with Loki. So he comes to you and makes deals.
Uh-huh.
The deals never work out in your favor.
Okay.
There may be a deal that's been made with Wanda that she doesn't remember, something along those lines. Or she may be about to make a deal to try and get either her brother or Vision back. Because they've made a lot of references to Pietro, the brother.
Yep, they did.
We also happen to know that Evan Peters, who plays Quicksilver in the X-Men movies, not the Marvel movies, will be appearing in WandaVision at some point. Is this a crossover to another universe? Are we going to see the first hints of the Marvel universe? Are we potentially going to get a secret cameo from Ian McKellen, who is Magneto is Wanda's father?
So let's get a little spoilery just in this last little bit of this discussion. So with that last shot where it looked very much like there was a Truman Show set happening, that really did allude to the fact that this is not Wanda's idea. Did it? That's what I took it.
I'm not sure whether – look, I think you've worded that a good way. It might not be her idea. It might still be her fault. She may be being manipulated into this.
Yeah.
Or her powers may be out of control.
Oh, and they're holding her in.
Yes, and they're trying to stop her sphere of chaos expanding.
So they're doing it for not only her own good but everyone's good.
Everyone else's.
Fair enough. Interesting.
I have a feeling it's going to get more bonkers from here on out.
Every episode's going to be crazy, and I think now we're going to look outside the WandaVision a bit more in each episode, which I think you want because that's where I think you're going to start getting answers. It's quiz time. I've called this quiz To Be Blunt. It's the Emily Blunt special.
Oh, here we go.
We had a little bit of a reference to her a couple of times, I think, in this episode. I think we did mention her. First question. Emily Blunt is one of four kids. Which number is she? Where does she sit in the family?
I'm going to say first.
She's the second oldest.
I thought she comes across very decisive a lot of the time. Yeah, so very much older sister vibe.
I think I would have guessed the same. Her first role, according to IMDb, was in 2003. It was a TV movie called Warrior Queen. Quick synopsis, Boadicea, the Warrior Queen in Britain, leads her tribe into rebellion against the Roman Empire and the mad emperor Nero, I think it would have been. What was her character's name? Did we go multiple choice? Is it Isolde, Agrippa, or Ciora?
I'm going to go with Agrippa.
She wasn't Agrippa. She was Isolde. I don't know who Isolde is, but the only one out of those three I knew was Agrippa, and she was Roman. She might have been the wife of or the sister. Agrippina was Nero's mum, I think. Really casting my mind back to ancient history, year 12 right here.
Yeah,
I'd struggling. Struggling. Yeah, that's fine. So in A Quiet Place, her character steps on a nail, which looks horrendous, like it's the bit that you go and look away.
Yeah.
Which foot, left or right?
I think it's a right foot.
It was the right. I thought it was the left. I had to Google. I was watching YouTube videos of it, and it's definitely the right foot.
I remember her falling to the ground in the basement and landing in a certain way.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. It was like she full body weight onto that. Oh.
Sometimes I'm not sure if I do, and then moments like that happen and I'm like, yeah, I think in pictures.
I saw that picture in my head there. That was impressive. In the movie The Girl on the Train, did she have an English or American accent? Based on a book?
American?
I had to go to Google because I'd never seen the movie. She's got an English accent.
I've not seen that
But it
movie
looked like
either.
She was in America. So... Mm. It's a hard one. There was supposed to be a sequel, or there potentially is a sequel to Edge of Tomorrow being made sometime in the near future. What's the title at the moment?
Oh, Live, Die, Repeat and Repeat.
Yeah, nice one.
Yeah. And I think they might do it as a prequel and be about the day where she became known as the bitch.
Yep.
Maybe. I don't know how otherwise.
Yeah, that's true.
Either way, I'm there.
Yeah, me too. Her husband, John Krasinski, was doing that YouTube show we were talking about.
Yes.
Early on into the pandemic. Two-parter. What was its actual title? And also, how many episodes did he make?
Was it Some Good News?
Some Good News, yep.
And he hosted. Was it 10?
It was only 3 episodes.
Only 3?
Isn't that weird? I was like, no, that's not right. And I was looking through all these different articles.
They did plenty more episodes, but he wasn't.
Yeah, because he sold it onto Viacom CBS. He was basically like, I've got too many things that I have to do.
He's got to start getting ripped for when Marvel calls finally.
That's right, finally. So he sold it off and he was like, someone else can do it. Keep it going.
That I actually forgot one of the rumors that I was going to jot down because involves him.
Yeah, what?
So, you know, for a long time people have been wanting him to be Mr. Fantastic for the Marvel, for Fantastic Four. Apparently, if that goes ahead, there's a very good chance they're going to back a money truck up to Robert Downey Jr.'s house to have an alternate universe Tony interact with Reed, who's the actual universe's smartest person.
What do you reckon the chances are? Like, what's your honest opinion?
Very high.
He'd say yes. He never seems to have had a bad experience Marveling himself.
I think he knows he owes his career now to Marvel.
Oh yeah,
and not in a subservient way. It's a they benefit off each other a great deal, but he seems to really respect the idea of introducing and building up new characters. Mm. And if his character can assist in doing that, then he's willing to come and do that. And that's why he went and played in the Sony Spider-Man movie because it made sense to bolster someone else's work. And that's a really admirable quality to have. So if he, you know, sure, they would pay him a ton of money to do it, but I can also see him going, yeah, I want to come and put Tony up against the actual smartest person in the universe and just see how that clashes. Doesn't have to be Iron Man. I just want him being just science buddies.
On that note, I reckon it's time to wrap up. Thank you to Nathaniel. That was great having him come in and do Godzilla and Kong chat. Thank you to Lily, who's – look, she did very well for a very little person.
She did all right.
Yeah, for a very long time. Although, you know, like I can see it in your face. I know what you're thinking. It took a long time because we had to keep stopping for her.
We did. Behind the scenes on the show, everybody, this took twice as long as usual. I'm so tired.
Oh, my goodness. Well, on that note, Tom, thank you very much.
Now I'll talk like Grang.